Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I have worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly, or to not put our hearts into an activity, means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most. Where heart and mind work together, we are happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present, and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different side of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and its stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best and be well, Ron. Episode 3, Partnering Heart and Mind. I had just finished morning rounds, having seen several newborns and a child I had admitted overnight, when I got called urgently to the emergency department. Another pediatrician and I raced downstairs, and we discovered that the emergency department team was resuscitating a five-month-old. This baby was discovered by her father, cold and lifeless, that morning. He immediately called 911, began what he could do of resuscitation, and the EMTs arrived promptly. They took over resuscitative efforts and got the baby quite quickly to the emergency department. The emergency department had been working on her for some time, to no effect. Neither they, nor the EMTs, nor the dad could get a heart rate back, nor could they get her to breathe. It was time to call the code. They called us not so much to help, but really to get our permission. They liked having a pediatrician around before they called the code. We discovered later that the baby had died from an overwhelming infection, that she had an inherited disorder with her immune system. What would have been an insignificant illness for most babies was overwhelming for her small body. Her father was still at home, being detained by the police for questioning, as in the case whenever child abuse is a possibility, and the mother, who had gone to work earlier, was called and on her way in. I knew this baby. I was on call after she was born, and she was in the hospital for 5 days because her mother had complications after delivery. I went to see them each morning, and her mother and I got close. I knew she would be coming in soon, and I couldn't imagine her walking into this room unprepared, so I decided that I would go out and meet her. I asked that we left all the resuscitative equipment in place, thinking that when she first saw Samantha, it would be good for her to have visible proof that we had done everything possible. I stepped into the hallway just as she was approaching. She looked up at me, and the first thing she asked was, "Do you remember me?" I said, "Yes." And then I said, "She didn't make it." She collapsed right there. I brought her to a nearby room so that we could talk, and I told her that we had done everything possible and prepared her for what she would see. When we walk in, we'll see Samantha on a small resuscitation table connected to all the equipment that was used, And once we set, the emergency team will disconnect her so that you can hold her. And that's what happened. Next to the bedside with two chairs, she sat in one and I sat in the other. As I sat next to her and she was holding her infant, I had the impression that she would probably like to have some time alone. There was a part of me that worried whether or not she'd be able to manage it, so I asked her if she would like to be alone, and she said she would. I cleared everyone out of the room, and when I was outside, I realized it was time to go to my office. I had a 15-minute drive before I saw my first patient, a delightful 5-year-old boy who was there for his well-child exam. I needed to drop everything that went on and be present for him and be able to experience in the delight he felt at being 5. I commonly talk to medical students about how we can do this. How is it possible that we go from room to room to room during the day and see enormous difficulties? Some of these are physical, some of these are psychological and emotional, some are socioeconomic. How do we go from them to the next one and the next one and the next one without carrying what we've experienced in each of these rooms? And then how do we leave at the end of the day without taking anything with us? For if we did take it with us, it would eat away at our being, we wouldn't be ourselves for our families, we wouldn't be whole, and we would eventually burn out. I realize that we can do this by partnering heart with mind. Intellectual thinking, scientific analysis, what I call the mind, is objective and its results are reproducible. If, for example, I asked a well-trained engineer to build an engine that could power a boulder up a certain incline with the right background, the right tools, and the right equipment, that engineer could do it. Once that model was made, anyone with the same equations, the same tools, the same equipment, and the same background could build that engine. Pictorially, this could be seen as an archer shooting an arrow toward a bullseye, with the bullseye the finished product, and the bow and the arrow and the space in between, all the knowledge and all the calculations and all the equipment that went into building the engine. The archer could be replaced by any archer who had that same knowledge-based tools and equipment. That same archer could even be replaced by an intelligent machine, by a robot. In this image, the space between the archer and the target is a straight line. Contrastingly, if a friend who was deeply loved who lived in a small town was seriously injured in an automobile accident, and it was post-COVID times, those who knew and loved this person would figure out ways to help. They would look within to see what they could do. One might offer to drive the spouse to and from the hospital each day. Another, with an artistic bent, might gather all the friends in town and have them make cards or little patches for a quilt, while one who is a cook might work with the hospital dietitian and arrange for home-cooked meals. Some would think of the children. They would see that they got their homework done, that they got driven to their after-school activities, and that clothing was fresh and washed. Some might think of the house and make sure that the dogs were walked, the lawns were cut, and the walkways shoveled during the winter. Each one of these would act out of their abilities and out of their love, out of their insights and out of their caring. If this were seen pictorially, it could be imagined as a circle, where each one of these friends stood around the circumference of the circle and the spokes radiating from them to the center of the circle, their friend, was love. One is straight, the other is curved. One is not better than the other. They are both different. Another way to see the difference between heart and mind is by picturing what the word sacrifice means to each. To the intellect, sacrifice has to do with preserving, protecting, and building one's strength. And it does so by letting go of one's desires now for future reward. This is the student who forgoes activities with friends to study. It's the athlete who trains isolated and alone, getting ready for the game. And it's the investor who saves money instead of spending it now so that they'll accrue wealth for later on. This contrasts totally to sacrifice for the heart. The heart's concern is the experience of another, and it does this through love and compassion. In its utmost, boundaries between one and another can even melt away. Sacrifice has to do with foregoing one's own creature comforts. It's the parent who stays up with a sick child without concern for their own sleep. This runs so deeply in the human psyche that if one were to sleep while a child was sick and crying, that person would be considered inhuman. It's the action of the first responders who touch us so deeply, who go to help others before worrying about their own well-being. And those who give their lives, the greatest of all sacrifices, in the name of others, are given our country's highest honors. The word courageous, in fact, comes from the Latin word for heart. I could drive back from the hospital and get over all that I went through the partnering of heart and mind. I used my medical insights to assess the situation and the practical details of the emergency department and the room. At the same time, I used my heart to look as compassionately as possible at the experience of the mother. As I balanced these and went back and forth through each, I created the setting that could be the best that we could create in the midst of this horrific tragedy. Through this, I felt good about what I had done. On the other hand, I could drop it because of the work of my intellect. It could point out to me that millions of people at the same time are suffering throughout the world. I can't fix all of them. I could only take care of what was before me at that present moment. Through my intellect, I could also appreciate that spending more time grieving wouldn't help her and it wouldn't help my situation. It wasn't my life. I could let it go. Now, the hospital staff went through the same process. A week later, we had a meeting with all of the participants in that code. During that time, we could each express our hurts, our pains, the difficulties that we had, and we could also look objectively at the work that we did. This effort was both to heal, and it was also to see that we learned as much as we could so that we'd be able to function even better the next time such an event took place. The partnering of heart and mind not only helps in outer settings such as these, but we can also use the partnering of heart and mind to clear the inner hurdles that block relationships. I received a phone call from a childhood friend whom I hadn't seen for years. He was going to be in town that evening on a business trip. It was obvious that there was nothing I could do but invite him for dinner. As I did so, I felt a knot in the pit of my stomach. I invited him over, but there was a part of me that really didn't relish it. I had some time that afternoon to think about it, so I looked to see what was going on. What was this knot in my stomach about? And then I saw that what happened was, this was someone who was extremely critical. I noticed that whenever we were together, he would always criticize me, and this tore me up. It really hurt. I wondered about this, and I wondered what it was that started it. I looked inside to see, was there an event that occurred, something where I hurt him, and that he was mean to me because of something I had done? If that were the case, I could apologize, we could talk about it, I could make it better. But no, that's not what I saw. I saw instead that that's how he was. He was someone who was simply critical and judgmental. That's how he spent his life. He was also very bright, so he'd ask questions that felt like they were criticism, and I saw that they really weren't criticisms of me. I saw that was just his nature. As I looked at this, I saw that he liked me, and that his criticisms and judgments were part of who he was. I could let go of all the hurts that I felt, because that's not really what he was intending. And I could instead look at the good times we had together and how we enjoyed each other's company. I held on to a picture of this friendship and imagined our getting together that evening and liking each other. I sat with this for a while. We never had a better visit, and this became the basis of a strong and lasting relationship. Partnering of heart and mind goes even deeper. It occurs as part of the human psyche, and it's often there in unconscious ways. One week, I just felt out of sorts. I didn't know what was bothering me. I just wasn't myself. I looked and looked, and I couldn't shake it. It was like there was a cloud over my head. That Saturday was a rainy, drizzly day, and we had nothing planned. After breakfast, I decided I would go to my office and take care of some paperwork that I knew I had to do. I worked steadily, going through notes, through correspondence, and making some telephone calls. And when I was finished, it was dinner time. I felt relieved. Whatever gloom that I had passed. Somehow, the outer responsibilities were weighing on me without my appreciating it. By taking care of practical details, I felt inwardly better. I developed these podcasts to not only describe how we think with both heart and mind, and how by partnering heart and mind we can live a richer, more fulfilled life, but I also do this so that interested listeners can apply these concepts to their own lives. And to do so, I've created a 3-part exercise. The exercises that I present here are thought exercises. You don't have to work on them. Eventually, by doing the inner thinking, outer events will change, just the way the sun shining on an ice cube will eventually melt it. The first of these is to look within and determine which is stronger within us. Is it our hearts or is it our minds? One of these does dominate. We have both, but we'll see that one is stronger. One is not better than another. This is about recognizing which one is stronger in us and honoring it. It has to do with looking back and seeing how this aspect of ourselves, whether it's our strong intellect or our powerful hearts, created so much in our lives. It really made us who we are, both outwardly and inwardly. It's responsible for our jobs, our relationships, our family structure, and so much more. Here, we're looking for the best that comes out of the one that's more dominant. The second part of the exercise is to look at the other side, the one that is less dominant. It's as if one leg was stronger than another. This is about rehabbing that other leg. If we're more intellectual by nature, in this part of the exercise, what we'll do is review our relationships and see where we could use being more compassionate, more open, more patient, more understanding, and less judgmental. At the same time, if we're more heart-based, this is a time to look at the practical details of life. Where is it that we should be more focused on taking care of outer events? Which are the ones that we need to do for our own lives? Which is the one that we need to do in our work life? And which is the ones that we need to do that would make our partners and friends and those closest to us happier? Look at to see what it is we need to do in the way of practical matters to make our lives better. In addition, if we're more heart-based, we can use our intellects to see which relationships are draining, which ones don't go anywhere but just take away our strength. We can also see if we have a drive to always be liked, where we spend too much time looking after the well-being of others, not in a way that's helpful, but again, in a way that's draining. If that's the case, we can use our intellect to be like the gardener, one that can prune back and lop off ones that aren't helpful, can help rearrange others so we can put them in context so that we gain strength and not weakness. The third part of the exercise is about using our hearts and minds to like each other. In using our hearts, it's about appreciating who we are, even loving ourselves despite our shortcomings. Yes, we do have remarkable shortcomings, but now it's to honor ourselves and to love ourselves despite them. In the first episode, We talked about going past another's shortcomings and learning to see what's deep within them. Now it's time to do that for ourselves, to like ourselves and to heal old wounds, to forgive ourselves. At the same time, we can use the intellectual side of ourselves to assess our strengths and our attributes. We can go from the ones that are the big ones in our lives to the ones that are the tiniest, smallest things. It could be anything from our sense of humor, our friendship, our honoring others, our diligence, our caring about children, our caring about family, anything it is that's a positive trait, build it up. Build it up so we get a good picture of ourselves. When we appreciate our gifts and we appreciate who we are, then we can simply be present for the next situation and the next relationship. Similar to the way I could drop all that happened on the way back from that hospital and be present and be fully there for the first child that I saw. To help listeners who are interested with these exercises, I've created several things. In the show notes, that can be found either at the homepage of where you listen to podcasts or at the website of the podcast under the episode section. The show notes describe these exercises so you can read them, print them, and go over them. In addition, in the show notes, I have several quotations about partnering heart with mind. I found these to be inspiring. I hope you enjoy them as well. I've also created a picture with the words embedded in it, partnering heart and mind. These can be found at the gallery at the podcast webpage. The webpage is ronschneebaummd.com. That's ronschneebaummd.com. These pictures come in two sizes, a large one and a small one. The large one can be downloaded and used as a screensaver for your tablet or laptop. The small one can be used as wallpaper for your phone. I find that having a visual reminder of something I'm working on is helpful. Also at the webpage, you can contact me about any questions you might have, about any suggestions you might have for future podcasts, and about an interest you might have in a webinar, one that could go deeper in particular issues that we cover in these podcasts. Go to the contact page and send me an email. I plan on posting this podcast on the 1st and 15th of each month. That means if you're listening to it when it first drops, you have 2 weeks to work with the idea of partnering heart with mind. If you're streaming podcasts and you're ready to listen to another one, I suggest that you take a bit of time, think about this one. If you like this podcast, do me a favor, share it. Share it with friends, share it with family, share it with colleagues, share it with anyone who you think might be interested. In addition, go to the homepage where you listen to podcasts, rate it and review it. That's how podcasts get known. I appreciate spending this time with you. I look forward to our next time together. Until then, all my best and be well, Ron.